Well, you may find this hard to believe, but I know exactly what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, well, I thought everything from Texas was supposed to be big. Some of you are thinking, I wonder if his real name is Bubba. And does he drive a pickup truck? And so I must say, just right off the bat here, I want to be honest and up front. I don't drive a pickup truck, but after many Little League seasons and soccer tournaments, I drive a minivan. And I wish all the occupants of my minivan could have accompanied me from the Houston area to come to Tennessee in the fall. And I'm privileged to be with you and appreciate your prayers on my family's behalf as we're apart. But glad we could be together and to do what I love to do, what I'd rather do than anything else in the world, is to study the Bible with God's people. You no doubt noticed that our sessions this week have been given a theme of who will follow Jesus. And you recognize that from our hymn. And the thing I like about that title is because it reminds us that discipleship is a matter of the will. You have to decide to follow Jesus. Nobody forces you to do that. Nobody can make you do that. It's something that you choose of your own free will. Who will follow Jesus? So what we'll do is look at some of the phrases of that hymn, but through the lens of those who followed Jesus most closely. And that is the 12 apostles, who made the decision to leave everything behind and follow him. And so for this first session, we're going to call it Working for the Master. And really all I want to do is look at the four times that the apostles are listed in the New Testament. That's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Acts. Did I trick you? And I want to do this first session like a class. So I want to solicit your participation, your questions, comments, and even criticisms as we go. So who will follow Jesus working for the Master? Now, the very first list of the 12 apostles is found in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 10. So I want to start with that reading. Matthew chapter 10 is where we'll begin. And we'll read the first five verses. Matthew chapter 10, starting with verse 1. And having summoned his 12 disciples, he gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of sickness and every kind of disease. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these. The first, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew his brother, and James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the tax gatherer, James the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the zealot, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. Now if I were to ask for a textbook Bible class definition of apostle, what is an apostle, what would you say? If we're going to define the word, how do we usually define the word apostle? Yes, ma'am.
A dedicated follower.
Okay, so she says a dedicated follower. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Somebody who witnessed Jesus.
All right, so a witness, and that would later be a qualification when they're going to replace Judas. Remember, somebody who's been a witness of the resurrection. There was a hand.
You say a supporter.
A supporter, okay.
Selected by Jesus.
All right, somebody chosen by the Lord for a special purpose. So think of this. Jesus knew, now the disciples did not at first, but Jesus knew that his earthly ministry would come to an abrupt end after about 3.5 years. And so he selected, I mean, hand chosen by Jesus, who his ambassadors would be to carry on his work and to further the preaching of the gospel of the kingdom. So these 12 were selected by Jesus for that specific purpose. The word, literally, apostle, literally means one sent. Now, that doesn't mean a penny. That means someone who is sent out. And you'll notice we stopped at verse 5. These 12, Jesus did what? Sent out. See, they're going to be sent. But did you notice that before they are called apostles, what's the first word that is used to describe these 12 in verse 10? He summoned the 12 what?
Disciples.
Isn't that interesting? All right, well, what then is our definition usually of a disciple? What is a disciple? A follower or a learner, like a student or a pupil? So here's the very first thing we need to understand about these 12. Before Jesus ever sent them out to preach, he said, come and learn. They had to be a disciple first. It wasn't like he was just walking down the street and chose 12 random people who were going to be his apostles. No, they were first following him. They had answered the call, come and follow me. And so we need to remember that when we start guilting people for not being evangelistic, you know, we'll say, oh, it says they went everywhere preaching the word. Why aren't we doing that? Well, first, we've got to come and be devoted to the apostles' doctrine. We have to be a learner. We have to know what we're going to say. We have to study the scriptures. And these 12 did. They were first disciples who came and followed, and then he sent them out to go and preach. Now, another thing we need to make certain we're familiar with is that when we're talking this week about following Jesus, being his disciples, like the 12 apostles, we need to understand that they were called to a special work that Jesus has not called us to participate in. There are a couple of clues in our text. What kind of things did Jesus send out the apostles to do that he has not necessarily told us to go and do? Say again, sir? Okay, they were given the authority to heal every kind of sickness, every kind of disease. So they had the power to perform these miracles to draw attention to the words they were saying. We can do these things from God, and so what we're saying is from God. Good. What's something else that the apostles were given or promised that has not been given to us? Very good. Casting out demons. We'll see that also in another of our lists that we'll look at. Spoiler alert. They were given the authority to cast out the demons. All right. Can you think of a promise that Jesus made that was specific to the 12 after his death? Something that was promised to the 12.
Comforter.
Yeah, the Comforter will come, the Holy Spirit. And he's going to do a couple of things. First, he'll bring you to remembrance the things I taught you that you've already forgotten. And then he'll guide you into all truth so that when you're standing in front of rulers, the words will be put in your mouth to say. He didn't give us that assurance. We're going to have to read what's written and then know how to communicate this word. So I just want to make the point that while we're studying the 12 apostles, there are things that were part of their work that we're not called to do. Now, another thing, just as we get started here, it says in verse 2, the names of the 12 apostles are these. These are the 12 specifically called by Jesus. There are, in the New Testament, other people who are said to be apostles. So here's where we lean on our definition of one sent out. Can you think of other people in the later on in the New Testament who are also referred to as apostles apart from this 12 that we read?
Paul.
Okay, Paul. So have you ever noticed that even when we reference something that he's written, we say, as the Apostle Paul said. So I don't know if that's because Paul was always having to defend his apostleship since he was not one of the original. But we still, when we say his name, it's the Apostle Paul. Good. Who else? Who else is called an apostle in the New Testament?
James, wasn't
it? James, the Lord's brother, is called an apostle. Remember, these are just ones who were sent. And think about this. Jesus in the book of Hebrews is called the great apostle. Can you think of a better description? One who has been sent on a mission to the earth to seek and save the lost. So just know that we're limiting our study this week just to these original 12. All right, so let's look at a couple of names here that are in Matthew's list, and the order is going to be different when you look at Mark and Luke. But there are two things that are always the same. One is Judas is always listed last, even in the song we teach our children. He's the last. 12 apostles Judas made, Jesus was by him betrayed. But the same name is also always listed first. Simon, who is called Peter. In fact, did you notice in verse 2 the word that is used to describe him? The first is how the New American Standard Bible translates. It's the Greek word protos, like we would say a prototype. So Peter is always listed first. And I don't know if that means he's got some kind of unofficial title where he was the spokesman of the group. It does seem repetitive, doesn't it, that every time Jesus asks a question, who usually speaks up first? Peter. I mean, as one guy said, his philosophy in life seemed to be, when in doubt, speak. You ever know anybody like that? I don't know what to say, but I'm going to say something. But did you know that there are more words in the Gospels that are preserved that Peter said than any other apostle? And there are more words that Jesus addressed to an apostle, to Peter, than any other. And so it just seems right that Peter is always listed first. Now, one thing that is unique about Matthew's list in verse 3 is that the occupation of Matthew is given. Other times he's just listed his name. But here it says Matthew the what?
Publican.
The publican, which is like the little girl came back from Bible class and her mom said, "What'd y'all study today?" And she said, "Oh, we studied that parable about the Pharisee and the Republican." A publican was just somebody who dealt with public money. They held public office. And what's another word for publican? Tax collector or tax gatherer, yours might say. Why do you think that would have been to the Jewish reader or the first century reader something that would have been quite shocking to know that of all the disciples Jesus had to choose, one of them he chose was a tax gatherer?
He
yes.
He was
okay, so the tax collectors were not popular. And why was that? Is it like the IRS today? We just don't like people taking our money and giving it to the government? Yes, Alva?
Wouldn't they enrich themselves by overtaxing?
Okay. All right. So we do read about people like Zacchaeus. Remember, he was a chief tax collector, very rich. And so there was some dishonesty. They paid the tribute to Rome that was required, but they would also skim off the top for themselves. Yes, sir? That's right. That's exactly right. Here's a Jewish man who's being employed by this oppressive government of a pagan nation who's inhabiting the promised land, and he's working for them. Keep your place here, but look to Luke chapter 5, and I want to look at when Jesus actually called Matthew, or here he's given his Jewish name, Levi, to follow him. Matthew, Luke chapter 5, verse 27. And after that, he went out and noticed a tax gatherer named Levi sitting in the tax office. And he said to him, "Follow me." And he left everything behind and rose and began to follow him. I want you to appreciate that when Jesus called Peter, Andrew, James, and John, what was their occupation? How did they make a living? They were fishermen. And so, you know, if this apostleship thing, this discipleship thing doesn't work out, and we decide it's not for us, we'll just go back to fishing. You know, there's plenty of fish in the sea. We'll just pick up where we left off. But for Matthew, when he arose and left everything behind, he couldn't go back. Because if you think being a tax collector was unpopular, who's going to hire a former tax collector? But he was willing to sever the ties with the world to follow Jesus. And for that, we just assume that all of that was left behind. And now he has a new allegiance and someone else who's going to be the master of his life. Yes, sir?
Interesting that he didn't choose people that were very prominent in the neighborhood or citizens. He chose the ordinary run-of-the-mill people.
All right. What a great comment and a great segue to our next list. So he said he didn't choose prominent people who were well known in the culture, but rather chose simple, ordinary people. And we see that in our next list, which is going to be Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 3, verse 13. Mark 3 and verse 13. And he went up to the mountain and summoned those whom he himself wanted. Now, I think that's what our brothers just described for us. I think the implication there is these are people nobody else would have wanted. They've already been passed up by the rabbis of their day. No one has called them to come and be a learner. And Jesus wanted them. Now, that gives great comfort to us, doesn't it? Because we're simple people. We're ordinary people. And we may not be qualified for things in this world. We may not be able to join some club or be a part of some society. But Jesus wants us. He wants us to be his disciples. So he summoned those whom he himself wanted, and they came to him, and he appointed 12. And notice again the pattern, that they might be with him, that is, come and learn, and that he might send them out to preach, go and preach, and to have authority to cast out the demons. And he appointed the 12, Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, and James, the son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James. To them he gave the name Boanerges, which means sons of thunder, and Andrew, and Philip, and Bartholomew, and Matthew, and Thomas, and James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus and Simon the Zealot and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him. All right, so verse 16 it says, and he appointed the 12. Everybody notice that? The 12. That's how they came to be known, the 12. Now, were these different men? Did he pick 12 clones of one another? No. In fact, we've already noticed that several of them were fishermen, which would have been kind of a rough and gruff exterior. And then you had a tax collector who would have been in opposition. The others would have been in opposition to. And then we have this name in verse 19. Simon, or the end of verse 18, Simon the Zealot, which is how he's described in all four lists. Simon the Zealot, now that's going to distinguish him from Simon Peter. But why would this have been another bombshell to read that of all the people Jesus chose for this special purpose, he chose Simon the Zealot? Anybody have an idea of who the zealots are? All right, so the King James Version does use the word Canaanite, which is another way, which the word literally means zealous. So don't think of it as somebody who lives in the land of Canaan, which is how we normally think of a Canaanite. It's just another way to describe zealous or zealot. Yes, sir?
We had a brother get a lesson on the zealots. Weren't they an extremist group within the Jewish community?
Okay, yeah. So they were one of the Jewish sects. So you had the Pharisees and the Sadducees. You had people like the Essenes who lived out in the desert. A lot of people think that John the Baptist might have identified with the Essenes. And then you had the zealots. And the zealots were the ones who said, we're going to overthrow the government. Their motto was, be zealous for the law of our fathers. And so they would have been known to carry weapons, daggers for assassination. And they might have even targeted people like tax collectors. And so think of that. In this band of 12, you have Matthew, the tax gatherer, who worked for the government, and Simon the Zealot, who said, we're going to overthrow the government. You ever wondered when Jesus sent them out two by two whether he didn't put Simon and Matthew together? Go preach the gospel. This isn't about you. But I want you to appreciate that this band of 12 different men came to be known as the 12. You know what that sounds like to me? The church. You don't invite people and say, come and be with 80 different people this Lord's Day. No, come and be with the church. Now, are we different? Do we have different philosophies? Do we have different judgments about how things ought to go, or different outlook on the political landscape and the election? Sure, we're different. But you know what brings us together? We love the Lord. We love His cause. We want to preach the gospel of peace because the kingdom is what's important. And these men put those differences aside and became ambassadors so that people would know the Lord's name, so they'd follow Him. And so when you make the decision, who will follow Jesus, I want you to see it's not going to be about you. It's not going to be always getting your way, the way you think it ought to go. No, you're submitting to him and make certain that people know who he is, just as the 12 did. Now, I don't want to spend a lot of time on the nickname that's given to James and John. We're going to talk about that in the next hour at 10 o'clock. But just see that just like Jesus gave Simon a nickname, Peter, he also gave James and John a nickname. Now, the Aramaic word is used, and thankfully it's translated, Boanerges, which means what? What was Sons of Thunder. That sounds like a wrestling team, doesn't it? Sons of Thunder. So just to put that in your mind, wonder why they would be called Sons of Thunder. You'll have to come back at 10 o'clock to hear the answer. All right, let's go then to our third list, Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6. So with these final two lists, Luke and Acts, obviously we know that it's the same writer who's compiling both lists, since Acts is the sequel, Luke's sequel to his gospel. So these will go together. So Luke chapter 6, starting in verse 12. And it was at this time that he went off to the mountain to pray, and he spent the whole night in prayer to God. And when day came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also named as apostles. So what detail does Luke give us here that we had not seen in Matthew and Mark as to what Jesus did the night before, leading up to choosing the 12? Say again. All right, he went up to the mountain and spent the night in prayer. Now, Luke does not reveal to us what specific things Jesus prayed for. So we'll have to speculate. And so there aren't any wrong answers here. What kind of things do you think Jesus might have prayed for all night before choosing his 12 apostles? Alva has the answer.
I think he would have prayed to God that he would choose 12 men to carry out God's purpose.
Okay, so perhaps seeking the wisdom of the Father in choosing the right ones. Isn't that a wonderful approach to some major decision in life that we have to make? And we're going to invoke God's blessing and wisdom that he'll somehow show us which way to go. Lord, I've prayed that before. Make the path clear for me. If there is in your will some way you want me to go, let me see that. Make it obvious to me. Okay. Yes, sir. In the back.
He could have prayed about how many he should have had. I mean, 12 seems like almost a random number, but there's a very specific reason as to why 12.
Okay. Now here's another interesting thing about this list. Those of you like me who like round numbers, you know, 10, 15, 20, why would he choose 12? It does seem random and arbitrary until Judas dies, and then they say we've got to choose one to get the number back to 12. So 12 is significant. Why do you think he chose the number 12? All right, so you think of 12 in the Old Testament as the 12 tribes of Israel, which represented then God's covenant with the Jewish people. And so,
considered a complete number.
Yes, yeah, good biblical number, a complete number. And so could it be that now Jesus is showing he's going to usher in a new covenant and a new kingdom, and that's going to be represented by 12 apostles versus the 12 tribes. And now this covenant will be to take the gospel to all the world, not just one nation. Yeah, very good point. Yes, sir.
I think he probably prayed for unity and peace amongst his disciples.
All right. So we do have Jesus' high priestly prayer in John 17, where he prayed that the apostles would be one. And then, as our brother said, he prayed for all disciples who would come that we would be one. So it makes sense, doesn't it, that he would have prayed for their unity here too. Good point. Yes, ma'am. Okay, so given the task, she said, he prayed that the men chosen would be able to fulfill the mission of the preaching of the gospel. Good. You think maybe, okay, go ahead.
Along those lines, praying for someone who would be able to fulfill the will of God, with Judas being the one to betray.
All right, yes. So pray for their strength in the task ahead, and maybe even, don't you think, naming them one by one in his prayer. God, give them the courage, give them the strength, give them the wisdom to accomplish the work that will be set before them. So he prayed all night, and then we come to verse 14. Here's the names of the 12. Simon, whom he also named Peter. Notice he's first again. Andrew, his brother. James and John. And Philip and Bartholomew. And Matthew and Thomas. James, the son of Alphaeus. And Simon, who is called the Zealot. Judas, the son of James. And Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. All right, well, I don't know if you noticed, but we've got a conflict here. So we have in Luke's list of the 12 a name that we didn't see in Matthew and Mark.
Second Judas.
Okay, so our brothers identified it for us. Judas, the son of James, that's in verse 16. Well, but it still equals 12 names, so that means there's a name not in this list that Matthew and Mark included. And so here's where the Bible skeptic comes along and says, see there, you can't trust the Bible. It doesn't even agree on the names of the 12 apostles. How can we trust anything the Bible says? Now, there is a conflict. There's a difference. So Judas, the son of James, is in Luke, and he's not in Matthew and Mark. Has anybody found the name that's in Matthew and Mark that's not in Luke? Thaddeus. All right, so now we've got to go to work and figure out what's the most likely explanation that explains why there's the difference here. Anybody put it together? What might be the most likely explanation?
Like any good old Southern boy, probably goes by the
middle. Yeah, isn't it common in the Bible for there to be someone who has more than one name? Let's look at an example here in Acts chapter 1, which is where we're going next anyway. Acts chapter 1. And look down at verse 23. This is where they're choosing the successor of Judas. They put forward two men, Joseph, called Barsabbas, who was also called Justus, and Matthias. And we know they chose Matthias because they said, we can't put all those names on a name tag. I mean, that's way too many names. Three names? How are we going to know what to call this guy? Do we call him Justus, Barsabbas? So three names for this one individual. Can you think of a reason that Judas, the son of James, might decide to go by another name? In fact, in John's Gospel, John 14, when John speaks of Judas, he puts in parentheses, not Iscariot. Wouldn't you love to introduce yourself? Hi, I'm Judas, not Iscariot. No, it's not me. I didn't betray Jesus. Thaddeus is kind of a descriptive name. It means warm-hearted or childlike heart. So it could be that maybe he was the youngest of the 12 or the most tender-hearted. We don't know. But I just want you to see that if we can explain this by saying it's the same individual who goes by multiple names, then that ceases to be a contradiction. And the scriptures are exonerated. All right, so that was our warning bell. Let's then go to the last list in Acts chapter 1. We're already there. And now we'll start reading at verse 12. And they returned to Jerusalem from the mount called Olivet, which is near Jerusalem, a Sabbath day's journey away. And when they had entered, they went up to the upper room where they were staying, that is, Peter and John and James, Andrew, Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon the Zealot, and Judas the son of James. These all, with one mind, were continually devoting themselves to prayer, along with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers. So this is after the crucifixion, after the resurrection, after the ascension of Jesus to heaven. And what description do you see in verse 14 of the apostles? These all were continuing how? Prayer and supplication with one accord or one mind. So you see how Jesus' prayer for unity of the apostles has been fulfilled. Now, what kind of interactions do we see among the apostles during the ministry of Jesus? What does it usually say they're doing with one another? Arguing, and what's usually the argument about? What are they disputing? What is it?
Who's the greatest?
Don't you know that was comforting to Jesus? And now do you see they're with one mind? And that's the transformation that comes over Jesus' disciples. We learn that our place is one of service to him. It's not for our name to be remembered. The apostles would shudder at the thought that there's a St. Peter's Basilica or a St. John's Hospital or a St. Andrew's golf course. They didn't want that. They want people to know the Lord that they served, the Lord they preached. They want people to know his name because that's who they came to follow. Who will follow Jesus? It'll have to be something that you decide. And what great examples we have to follow in the steps of those who came to follow and then were sent out to preach. Thank you for your participation this morning.